Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Soccer Show's World Cup post game. We're here talking about the US qualifying for the round of 16 at the World Cup alongside England from Group B tonight. I'm Jack Collins and I'll be your host. And joining me is the wonderful Christine Cooper. How are you doing, Christine?
What have we just lived through? I am still buzzing, but also a little bit is just a relief. I was so riddled with panic and anxiety earlier today, which I think seems to have been a bit warranted, but we can all finally exhale a little bit. I feel like, you know what, like football is drugs, soccer is drugs. There's no better high than this, but obviously a favorable outcome for the US. So here we are. Happy to be back with you, Jack.
It's the breathing afterwards, right? It's the kind of like, whoa, right? We've got to just have a couple of minutes.
We need to practice our breathing and meditation skills.
You know, I was brought in as a neutral for all these things, and I found myself so entrenched in this USMNT side. I just feel, you know, like so aggressively entwined with them at this point. I mean, I picked up sides through this tournament as I've gone on, but this one I think is one I've stuck to, and it helps that Tim Ream and Anthony Robinson are in here kicking about. And
I commend you for even trying to maintain neutrality, because quite frankly, my entire life, no matter how neutral I am going into a match, rest assured, I am aggressively rooting for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Even if I don't say it out loud. Like, I'm like, what is wrong with me? Is this actually an affliction?
I latch on to teams in pretty much anything. I'll be like, oh, yeah.
The mental gymnastics. I'm like, you know what? He once played for a club team that I liked. And maybe he's from my hometown. And now I must, my boyhood club that I've never watched in my life. I'm ignited. You must win. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
None of us are well.
This sport has its ups and downs, but an up tonight, and I think one that we'll enjoy talking about. And we'll start with this US game against Iran, 1-0 to the USA. But could and probably should have been more in this first half. A couple of really, really good opportunities squandered by the US. A real half of dominance. And look, we'll come on to the fact that it was another game of two halves in some ways, like the Wales game. We'll come on to the fact that there were these kind of changes in the second half that maybe made things a little bit harder than perhaps they needed to be. But let's just take this first half as a solo period to begin with. It was brilliant, Christine.
I was so impressed with the group performance. Obviously leaps and bounds. I'm still completely in adoration of Anthony Robinson's performances. Tyler Adams, again, he is everywhere. He is so smart, in just picking out where the balls are going, how they're playing through. We were much, much better of a collection for even shots. The first one came 10 minutes mark, drastically improved from the prior two. Had six shots that were reasonably on goal by the 30th minute, I think, in this match, which compelling evidence to suggest that they may actually know what they're doing. It was pleasing. I really, defensively, ball movement, Dest obviously on the other side, I think an equal performance to sort of acting as that pseudo winger, as Robinson on the other side. Very, very effective. I think we saw a lot more sort of personality, dominance out of McKennie, some of those balls through. Like, I was so happy that you start to get a little bit panicky. Like, is this our evolution? Is this the US men's team emerging? Or are they just toying with my emotions? And we're going to have that fallout where there's sort of a heartbreak upset of some sort but I was riding high through the first half for sure.
I think there was lots to like, right? And it's easy to ride high on a performance like that because there was very little kickback. And I think if we got to half time and it had been 0-0, then maybe you look at that and go, oh, is this another opportunity squandered in that we've been completely dominant? And then kind of got those strange feelings that you're looking at it and going, oh, are we going to throw this away having been so excellent in the first half? So when the goal went in, it did feel like a massive relief, I think, in so many ways. Just
it
to be
was,
like,
but how damn. Bittersweet to have it happen at the risk of Pulisic. It's very our luck as a U.S. men's side that, you know, you finally get that goal, which, yeah, we needed somebody to make that run and go straight through. Obviously, we don't know what's going on yet with Christian's abdomen. Hopefully he's okay. Not the only knock to
it
take.
It felt like an impact. It felt like an impact injury, which
honestly,
does usually...
I felt it because I have actually even more recently, which is a terrible thing to admit as an adult that plays in a co-ed league, taken a significant knee to a similar area off of a back post. And I almost couldn't wear pants for the following 5 days. I was so deeply bruised. I'm not even remotely kidding. So, I mean, sympathies to him, but I think it's going to be a rest, which probably not going to see him starting on Saturday now. My best guess, right? Saturday is the next. Sheesh, yeah, I haven't even looked Saturday. Up for our head now.
Saturday afternoon. They keep rolling now. That's the
yeah.
thing. And it doesn't rest. It doesn't rest. But look, it's one of those. Look, the big decision, I think, before kickoff that everyone was talking about was Cameron Carter-Vickers coming in to this defensive line.
Only big change, right?
Sargent. I mean, obviously, Josh Sargent came back in as well. But that
Sargent,
was the one.
Not as much of a surprise as Cameron Carter-Vickers. I think... I probably am not in the minority with those who do not regularly watch his club play in saying that I had reservations. I thought that the better decision would have been to stick with what we had the past two matches, at least a little bit more solidity in the back, was worried about some of those things. But I mean, Berhalter, even in pre, had said, you know, he's more used to these teams that sit deep and that like heavy countering opponent. And so he had given him his blessing, which, again, I haven't watched his club play as often as you have, Jack, to even chime in there. I just sort of resolved myself to sit back, locked in, and watch to see what he had to offer. And I was wildly impressed.
Yeah, I mean, this is it, right? So Celtic are always ball dominant in, you know, pretty much every game they play domestically at the very least, less obviously in Europe. But I think we've seen him really evolve and take that step at Celtic that maybe people weren't sure that he could make. You know, coming, there's a couple of loan spells out from Spurs. It was one of those question marks over whether he was going to make that jump to the big time or not. And I really did think that it was a risk that Celtic took, and it's been a risk that's paid off. He's been really, really impressive.
Yeah, I think that... despite what many would probably shout from the rooftops, Greg has made a lot of very calculated risks in terms of what he's been willing to try to push forward. And I think that CCV is one of those. And I think he paid off. I think last dash, and I don't want to jump too far ahead into the second half yet, fairly unblemished. He's got my signature on the line in terms of faith in him as a defender going forward for this side.
Yeah, well, we have a comment from this. Ty Wagner said, you know, Greg got the big things right. It might be Wagner. I do apologize, actually. Greg got the big things right and the small things wrong. Game plan was right. Starting CCV was right. Five back line at the end was right. Haji Wright was wrong. Shaq Moore was wrong. Pray for health. And I feel like this echoes quite a lot of your concerns before we just came on air, Christine.
Yeah, I had my little U.S. men's national team Festivus prior to Jack and I jumping on. I think that I do feel similarly. I think where I perhaps differ, I wasn't as, I would say, excited about seeing the shift to the back five as, I guess, as quickly as we had. And I understand the decision because with the way that these matches have been played, you don't really know that you're subbing on for potentially a 20-minute stint rather than say like a 10 to 12 minute. Yeah. That I would have been okay with closing out the match. I think that the US having done that, Iran had shown its teeth. They were still ready to go, you know, for that additional, you know, 100-minute match that is now becoming far more likely to be the norm than the outlier in this tournament. I do agree aggressively with the Haji assessment and also Shaq Moore, unfortunately or fortunately, depending upon how you look at that. I think that Shaq Moore now over two matches has shown to be a little bit of a liability that I'm not comfortable with. I would much rather see Yedlin. I know it's very hard to, we're really managing a lot of the fitness for the players that we're seeing shine. And that's just an unfortunate side effect of this tournament, the timing, et cetera. Same thing with McKennie. He wasn't healthy leaving Juventus with a quad injury. He's absolutely shined and blown a lot of criticisms out of the water, which, I mean, he's always my dude. I'm not going to even pretend to have a completely unblemished opinion of him, but like objectively, beautiful ball movement today. That guy got picked a couple times, but like Iran are largely a second ball team. They also are still like more of a threat in the final third than the US are. So, I mean, for what transpired, I'm very downvote on Shaq Moore. Haji Wright, I expect a lot more of. I think that he very much was a wilting flower on pitch today. Both just even like off ball, just there wasn't grit there for me. So he was kind of, anything he did was kind of negated. I don't see that being another pick for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. It was good, and there were moments at the end that were a little bit hairy. I thought Zimmerman came on, and yes, while I agree with you that the back five was a little bit long in how long it had to be suffered for, Zimmerman did really well, headed away everything.
Agreed. And also had that critical clearance with the CCV transpiration of that weird possible. I mean, for me, it wasn't a foul, but the fact that we even had to hem up there for a moment and wait with bated breath as to whether or not that ref was going to make that call that late in that match and hand Iran a pen was...
It's never a penalty in a million years, right? And there's nothing on it. And I've really enjoyed some of the reactions.
I feel like the pregnant pause, though, Jack.
Yeah,
the pregnant
yeah.
pause that goes there gives you that little bit of doubt where you know in the depths of your brain that there's no chance, but yet... You're now worried, okay? I was panicked.
Well, before they showed the replay, I was like, oh, God, what's happened here? This is a real stressful one. And I saw it, and then I was watching the kind of... It was almost like a role play that they were trying to show the ref what had happened. And I was like, that's just not what went on. I've just watched it back, my friend, and I can guarantee you that that's not what happened in the area. So it was one of those. But once I saw the replay, I was like, they're never giving that in a million years. And I think that's the kind of killer there. But, you know, generally, I thought... especially in this first half, creative. There were some really lovely interchanges of play between the front three. McKennie and Adams pulled strings all night. I thought Yunus Musa was probably the best player on the park, generally, you know, across this whole thing. And the fullbacks were so high and wide for so many, you know, so much
they
of this game.
They played the width so well. And and personal preferences, I have to add them in. I love that style of play. So for me, this was... perfect orchestration. A few times they had like, you know, Sargent and Weah playing balls off of each other, which was beautiful. Perfect. A little bit saucy. I think my only complaint early on was that I legitimately screamed at my TV for Weah to shoot. Shoot! Like that one turnover that he happened to just get a little extra, like, let me make that one extra pass. And it's like, no, shoot. Shoot, you're in the box. Shoot, play the rebound. It's likely not going directly to the keeper's hand. Be a little bit more decisive. And I think that that's where they're lacking some of that in the final third.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I think it's growing and I think it's getting better with games. And as we've kind of grown through this tournament in so many ways, you're looking at the US side. And in the first game, yes, obviously there's the goal that comes through, but it's the only real clear-cut opportunity, I think, in a game that dominated for Asia. Then I thought that the US were the better side against England, and I thought today they were the better side against Iran. That's a massive, you know, result in terms of how this group looks. And it takes the USMNT to the round of 16 where they'll face the Netherlands. Now, it's not the ideal tie, I would say, on paper. But equally, the Netherlands haven't been brilliant. You know, this is a game where you're looking at a side that is star-studded, absolutely no doubt about it. And there is no doubt whatsoever that the USMNT come into this as underdogs. But you look at their performances. I thought against Qatar today, they were fine, but not great. And I think against Ecuador,
you still have the lens of they are playing against Qatar, right? That tempers things a bit, right? I think that if anything, if we're going to move positively from this match, I think that Greg now has all of the notes he possibly could need on each and every player, their strengths, weaknesses, and probably better ways to tweak the usage of subs and manage minutes on some of the legs of the other players who are absolutely, you know, leveled from just the tenacity of play. I'm not mad at any of those players for that. I think they did a great job. I think they probably have to play a bit smarter against Netherlands than they have, you know, some of these other squads, especially demonstrating matches like Wales and even this one specifically, where you almost have a completely different story, both halves again.
Yeah.
I think that is probably a point of weakness that for me, I still have lingering questions. I think that's what will end up killing them, because like you cannot continue to play for draws or play holding at just like a 1-0. It gets difficult because you see the brilliance in the first half, the second half, it's so diminished and depleted, all other things aside, that you almost argue they have to get it right by Netherlands, or it's going to be a do or die situation. There can't really be all that much lofty hope, as much as I'd like to be blindly optimistic about them traveling deeper into this tournament.
I think when you look at this kind of game and you look at the three in general that the USMNT have played, I would say that England are probably a slightly better team than the Netherlands are at this point, or at least have demonstrated within this tournament that they are a slightly better team than the Netherlands have so far. And the US handled England relatively serenely, I think, in general. And that's got to be a massive plus. And you go into this game and you go, right, well, you know, where are they going to attack? They're going to go down that right-hand side. That's fine. It's going to be another battle there for Anthony Robinson. And that's going to be interesting. And there's, you know, moments, I think, Cody Hakpo has scored three wonderful goals in this tournament, hasn't done all that much else. And I think maybe the fact that he scored some wonderful goals is highlighting a little bit of the fact that you're like, he's not actually playing all that well. He's just scoring good goals. Memphis has been off the pace, obviously coming back from an injury. There's a lot going on with this Dutch team. You know, Daley Blind is playing at left wing back. I don't like him there. I think he's a much better left center back / flat left back. And maybe they're lacking a bit of forward thrust in those areas. It's not been plain sailing. And I think the US can get at this midfield. And if you can get this midfield,
that's true. I think if they continue to stay the course with their most optimal lineups, I think that's, I'm 1,000% in agreement with you. And I don't think that Netherlands should be that big of a deal. Now, if they get outmaneuvered, if we have a few of the weaker players slotted and they get Louis van Gaal, then, you know, that's another story.
Yeah, and that can happen. And there's, but also there's no disgrace going out to the Netherlands in the round of 16. That's right. That's a perfectly reasonable place.
I don't think that would be, you know, like hide your face shaming level of performance. But I think it needs to be tweaked up a bit. We need to not be, you know, making subs like Check Moore and Haji, and maybe not all at once, right? Maybe individually in pockets, they're protected because of the strength of the other players together collectively, fine. But the second half, it got way too shaky where it shouldn't have been in instances for my liking.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, talking of subs, no Gio Reyna again. Now, the talk of a rift has been played down by lots of people in the camp. And I do wonder if this is just one of those where obviously the hand was forced with Brendan Aaronson at halftime coming on for Christian Pulisic. And then at that point, when he wants to take Tim Weir off, he goes, right, I'm going to bring in another centre back. That's where I'm going to. But there will be conversation about it because.
Oh, I know. Conversation is probably a very polite and more measured way of describing what will definitely transpire, because people like to scream across the internet. They like attention. They like all of the things involved. I think that without hearing...
And football's a drug, we said at the top.
Yep, without hearing what Greg says in post at the time that we're speaking, I think it's hard to discern yet how many of those specific details that you've... those are all reasonable reasons not to or to have Gio on. You know what I mean? Like sometimes your plans get disrupted. That's part of being an effective manager, yeah. Making the call to pivot.
On the fly, right?
Yeah. Right. Like sometimes it happens. So I think that right now it's too hard to say. I can't argue that, you know, Gio should have been on because quite frankly, what we saw in the first half, I wouldn't have changed for a second. So I think that it makes it very difficult to figure out how much of this is actually purely tactical and perhaps some maneuvering. And obviously the personal issues that have now been downplayed, this happens a lot. Players have relationships across the board. Like you have to be silly to not think that they all talk in some capacity. It's just
unless you're the Belgium team, apparently none of them speak to each other anymore.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe that's where we need to get to, right?
Like, yeah.
Everybody's under a gag order. No, I think that the unfortunate side of that is that it certainly draws a unnecessary dark cloud over Gio during this tournament that he certainly doesn't need to be contending with. I think the focus needs to be on the tournament for all of them. And it's unfair for even fans to sort of dive on this idea that, you know, that's the only reason that he's not playing. I think it's there needs more clarity there. I'm sure we'll see Gio further in the tournament. It'd be impossible not to. You have, you know, set rotation. But I think for what's been working, what arguments do you have?
Yeah. And I also think we've seen that Aaronson is his go-to guy, whether it's as an eight or as a wide man, right? And right. So like, for him to have to go, you've got 45 minutes here. This isn't a 10-minute change that I can reverse.
You're going to have to yank Pulisic for an injury and you need somebody for pressing ability and final third help to plug that hole. I have very few arguments that I'd be able to mount against Aaronson.
Yeah, I'd agree. Completely agree.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
In the other game in this group, which I'm sure that you haven't watched, getting wrapped up in it, I double screened this.
I watched the score and some of the match minute by minute for England. And I'm going to tell you that the US Iran match was so overwhelmingly captivating that I.
Correct. No, this was very much the second screen. So, I mean, the vague logistics are that Wales weren't very good. And in England kind of cruised past. And once they got the first, it all opened up. 2 goals in 2 minutes. Marcus Rashford scored a wonderful free kick and then scored a second for the third goal for England, which was a really nice run down the side, cut back inside and scored with his left foot. That's a rarity. Keep that one in the bank. And between them, we saw England kind of just seal the deal. Harry Kane crossed for Phil Foden. So everyone was pleased with that, I think.
Yes. That will appease the masses.
That's what you mean. It's a bit like the Gio Reyna thing, right? So
U.S. men's national team is to Gio as Phil Foden is to England, for sure. I think that I heard many, many somewhat violent arguments in favor of Foden. So it's nice that that gang got appeased today. Overall, what do you think based on what you watched? Because I cannot even opine. going forward, do you think that England look solid?
Well, I think we've seen two different Englands, right? So the England that played against Iran and the England that played against Wales today. And we've seen the England that played maybe the first half for this game and the whole game against the US.
Where the irony in there being slow. This bizarro mirror between the US and England at this juncture, where you can make very vague statements about both squads and not be able to discern who it's about, is
it's something, isn't it? It's quite something. Yeah. I think it's probably the way. I think England are fine. I think that the path they're on puts them on collision course with France in the quarterfinals. I think right now I'd be hard pushed to see
very high
France. Exactly. So that's where I'm at with it. Equally, I've seen England randomly sort of walk the way through random tournament games before, and I wouldn't bet against them winning the odd game 1-0 and kind of getting past where maybe they think they should be. But I can't see them getting past France at the moment. And Senegal, I think, well, we'll come on to them in a minute, but Senegal were very good today and I really enjoyed watching them. And you know, just maybe there's a shock waiting to happen there. So we'll see.
Senegal and Ecuador were how do I put this? I was elated for Senegal. I really want to see them just fight, duke it out to the last second, right? But Ecuador really tempered some of the joy, because I genuinely feel badly for them. Like, I hate when that happens. I hate when that happens. You want to just be like, yeah, Senegal, suck it, Ecuador. And then you're like, no, I actually I'm a little bit heartbroken for them.
It's a really mad one, because actually if Ecuador had pushed on and won that game against the Netherlands, then maybe we'd be looking at a completely different scenario today and how this all played out. But alas, it was what it was. And before we move on to that group, though, there's a question here from Richard, who says, being objective, I'm having a hard time understanding the USMNT style of play. There are two fixtures that they should have got a lot more out of. And I think that that's probably fair. But I think that stylistically, I can see what Bielsa's trying to do, at least at the start of games. Although I think there may be questions about how he's ending them.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do. I think that over the last, especially more recent few years, I think that that has sort of been a goal, is to carve out a very specific style to this very young bunch that who will inevitably go on to play more than a few World Cups together, God willing, right? I think that he's gotten most of it right. I think that some of it, you know, I also think that a lot of people that probably watch probably more like European play are probably frustrated with him, in that they want to see that one true striker emerge for the squad. And like, that doesn't happen to be a component of the style that they're playing in.
It's Flo Balogun, by the way. It's Flo Balogun. New York born Flo Balogun. There's the answer to the USMNT number 9 problem. But alas, go on.
Oh my God. I'm like, wow, that's going to be something I think about later. I think. Yeah. But yeah, I think there should have been more that they've gotten out of it? Yeah, but like, again, like Iran at least like has better chances on paper in terms of finishing than the US do. So when you're playing sides that are formed like that, I mean, and Iran aren't the pushover that I think that people thought they were. Like, no. Taremi is like Porto forward. Like, he's good. He wasn't going to quit hammering. There's a lot of other Iranian players Porlegangi that's like very good at hold up play and things like that. Like the sum of their parts, and yeah, like you can argue Wales, but again, like I think that some of that is in fact like our US men's national team deficiency in being able to there's evident strong sides and weak sides. They still are working through that.
I also think when you look at the Wales game, Wales got it right second half. Right, they saw where the game was being won.
What happened with the US team, which is ideal if you're Wales.
But also, I think that they were like, "We're losing this midfield battle. Let's go long. Let's get a big man up top and see if we can stick it to them that way." And it worked. And therefore, you've got to give some credit to Robert Page. And to be honest, he's made a lot of bad tactical decisions as well. That was a very good one, and it shifted the game momentum in their favor. I think when you look at today's game, it was there to be put away in the first half, and maybe there was something to be said for coming out second half 15 minutes and hammering it and then coming into the shell rather than just letting the game come on top of you. But equally, there's an element of that where, you know, the US have gone 1-0 up twice, and in both second halves have then sat back on that lead and gone, right, we can defend this. And maybe there's the question mark to be had there. If you do that against a stronger side, are you going to get punished? And I suppose we'll see that.
I'd argue yes. But I mean, hopefully this now happening twice, at least in succession, you have to address that. That's not something that you can keep rolling the dice on, in my opinion. Yeah. But so to your point, Richard, yes, they should have gotten more out of this, but also I think that we need to not discount the sides that they've actually faced. I think we need to give them far more credit than they've been given.
Yeah, no, this was a, you know, the hardest group on paper, right? Every side in the world top 20. Now, I mean, whether you give much stock to FIFA rankings or not, I don't personally, but I think that there was a fair amount in this group where you go, yeah, England are the side that people are going to go, right, they're probably the best side in the group. And then the rest of it was very tight. And that's how it's kind of played out as well between the three other teams, right? You take out the England results out of this group and everything's very tight. And that's how it was going to be. And so therefore, to get out of that group, and I think you can say the same with other groups in this World Cup, the Serbia, Switzerland, Cameroon group behind Brazil, you're going, right, that's a scrap behind that to see who gets out of that group. Ignore the Brazil results. Scrap between the three of you to get it out. And that's going to happen more and more. And so to win that scrap, I think, is something that needs credit in itself. There's another one here from M. Wade who says, do you think there's a world where Aronson plays an annoying nine role instead of watching Sergeant Ferreira flounder at the top? Not under Berhalter, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But I also, I mean, I don't know if I'd call performances by Sargent and Ferreira floundering.
I thought Josh Sargent was very good today, and I have not said that often, and I watch him a lot in the Championship, and I often don't think he's very good, but I thought he was excellent today.
I thought he had a great game today. I really did. Maybe not consistent with past performances, but I don't think that I'd have any issues with him. I don't know what arguments you'd have about his play today. I really, if you want to argue with me about Shaq Moore, if you want to argue with me about like some of the other players today and tell me that they're horrible, I would be inclined to agree with you. But I think outside of just having Sargent specific biases, I don't, no notes for him.
No notes. Right, let's come on to the other two games today, which were in Group A. The Netherlands, we've already talked about a little bit. They beat Qatar 2-0, and Ecuador lost 2-1 to Senegal. This Ecuador-Senegal game, and I know you spoke about the kind of mixed feelings, I completely agree with you. I think Ecuador have been absolutely sensational. And looking at and watching them over the course of this tournament, I've just really enjoyed them. They've been a real breath of fresh air in so many ways. And I was worried about this team. You know, I thought it was young. This is obviously the crop that did really, really well in the youth tournaments and had got to various finals and quarterfinals and semifinals as a youth crop. And it feels like they were coming of age, but I was worried about where the goals were going to come from. Turns out Ena Valencia's just still got it at tournaments, so it doesn't really matter. But to see them crash out was a shame. And yet the joy of watching Senegal go through was something as well.
Yeah, I'm just Senegal focused, very like Koulibaly hive, we ride. Like let's see what we got. It's a nice little story with Cissé at the helm, having captained that side in 2002. me being like, oh my God, I remember that. And now I'm going to go start drinking aggressively. No, it's funny how many moments that you realize some of these players, you know, playing either debuting or otherwise, like early on in my like childhood and life, and seeing them, including Memo, that just are currently making me feel very old, where I'm just like, oh, you mean to tell me I have now lived through the rest of this man's career and he is now managing? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, he takes it to heart. He's a young manager. He's a young man. I mean, 2002 is just about the first World Cup I can remember. So
yeah,
I was very much still a baby at that point. So I'm going to give
beyond that. Good luck. It was very soft brain stuff. Do not ask me about what transpired in the 90s. I probably read about it in a book.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my things are visioned through watching the DVDs back, I think, later through life. But this was nice in many ways. Koulibaly scores the winner. Great for him after the season he's had. Also, he was wearing the captain's armband today with number 19 on it. And I tweeted about this for Papa Bouba Diop, who died 2 years ago today. And who obviously scored Senegal's first goal in that 2002 tournament. And there was an element of written in the stars that for me that I really, really did
love.
Enjoy.
I don't care what anybody says. Us collection of football fans, world football fans, I'll say, we are romantics. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a sucker for a story like that.
Narrative FC, we ride.
Yeah. Like, but that's part of the passion that goes into the sport, right? Seeing that and sort of these tip of the hat moments from player to player generationally is, it's endearing. So yeah, like that certainly adds a special touch to a match that, you know, they managed to dig out. Just, I hope that if anything comes of this, that Ecuador side isn't so deflated due to just this unfortunate bouncing, because they are a fiery, talented bunch. And I really don't doubt that we won't see them again for, you know, next World Cups.
I think we'll see them next time, closer to home soil, shall we say.
But
I'd imagine that they're going to be there, especially with an expanded universe, shall we say. The cinematic universe of the World Cup is expanding to 48 teams for the next World Cup. So we're going to have more parties and more teams to research.
I can't even, how? Do you, like, as an aside, I hope everyone realizes the considerable amount of time and research that goes in, like, months leading into, and then the crunch once the rosters are actually officially dropped on, like, our side. Like, I was dreaming about rosters, okay? Like, I don't know how I'm going to have just like a dictation tool that's like, oh yes, this is the notes that I took from.
To be fair, maybe by next time we'll have them. I've wrote 2,000 words on Saudi Arabia. I don't think it's possible to know more about their squad.
Researching some of the players that don't even have a club side is probably one of my favorite things, but not when I don't have the luxury of time.
That's enough about Cristiano Ronaldo, though. We'll move onwards. Netherlands scored twice. Frankie de Jong scored. That was nice. Cody Hakpo, three goals, as we said, across the course of the tournament so far. Someone who has eyes on him all over the planet. But this is a big stage for him. And he's taken to it in terms of making his mark, even if the performances haven't always been good.
Yeah, I feel like you're always going to get players, you know, that shine, that know that they have multiple eyes on, and this is their best possible showcase they can provide. And then I think there's similar ilk that end up, you know, floundering in here that look pretty poor and do their worst case of PR historically, especially for audiences where, you know, you are just like that Olympic watching, World Cup watcher kind of gang that are like, that player's terrible. And it's like, no. I promise. And you're like, do I go on assume defensive maneuvers, roll tape? Like, it's interesting.
I think it's gonna be very interesting to see what happens to Cody Hakpo after this. So we shall see. But I think with that, Chris, we'll probably look about calling it a day. I mean, I'm just going to ask you your final thoughts on the US and what that was today, because it felt like a white knuckle ride, I suppose, for the last 20 minutes or so. But generally, a really impressive performance, one which you can take lots from.
All in, I feel positive. not just based on today's performance, but the collection of them that we've seen now. I think it's safe to say that we know who's capable of handling the workload, where we need to make some adjustments, what needs to be fortified going forward. But it's good that we haven't, you know, seen anything that would essentially count them out going forward. They deserve the win today. Could there have been more goals that, you know, people would be, you know, salivating over? Of course, we like goals. They're fun. They're joy.
Like 3-4-0. Yeah, it would take the edge off the end of the game.
As much as you can have an appreciation for a perfectly tactically neutralized match of a 0-0, you want to see goals. I think that I would like to see them be a little bit more dominant, or at least maintain some of that grit that we see now, more likely in the first half than the second half. And hopefully, in terms of the subbing and whatnot, we get more of a rhythm and sense of, you know, maybe we're making these substitutions, we're making these calls to drop more defensively too early based on the added time. And I think that that's been a giant wrench in some of these wheels, honestly. But I think as they start to gain that momentum and understanding for what does happen, feel good.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd just like to point out before we go that the Hoover Dam, as I'm calling them, of Cameron Carter-Vickers and Tim Ream conceded 0 goals as a partnership. I tweeted this before the tournament started. If they started together, they wouldn't concede. So here we go.
They deserve those flowers. They do. They really, really do.
There we have it. The Hoover Dam. There you have a name for them to take with you for today. But that's all from us. Thank you so much for watching today. Thank you so much to Ms. Christine Cooper for joining me.
Thank you so much, Jack. As always, a 10 out of 10, perfectly good time with you now.
It's been a real pleasure. a real pleasure. And we get more of these because the US are through to the round of 16.
My gift shirt in the back there that is perfectly obnoxious to temper all of my more, I think, measured opinion.
Indeed. I've been Jack Collins. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the Athletic Soccer Show's World Cup post game. And we'll see you tomorrow.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.